The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Fill her up.
You're listening to the Gas Digital Network.
What is up, my fellow addicts? Very honored to have this dude on the show. A fucking legend. That's all we can say. It is Ted Nugent, the Nuge, the Motor City Madman, the great Gonzo. You know him. You love him or hate him, but he definitely is a character. I'll tell you this. My co-host and my producer wanted to come in hating him, but he's a likable dude. He just really is a likable dude. That really you can't say it any other way. You're going to enjoy the interview. We talk a lot about his old school rock and roll days, a little bit about hunting, a little bit about politics. We can't avoid it with Ted Nugent, but just a really fun episode. Remember, we do the show every Wednesday, every Saturday, 9 p.m. Eastern time. If you are a big Nuge fan, you could have heard this 5 days ago, commercial free at gasdigitalnetwork.com. Use the code SDR and you get 20% off the entire network. And right now we're giving away a PS5. Details are at gasdigitalnetwork.com. All we really care about is you telling your friends, sharing the show, getting it out there. Post something on social media. Tag me in it at I Am Ralph Sutton. Let's just keep that show flow going. And here it is right now. It is the Ted Nugent episode of The SDR Show.
This is the intro to the shit show.
Years,
well, I'm 72 and I full screen every couple hours. Don't worry about it. I had a bumper crop of fuck yous this year. If you need some, I'll bring them by the pallet.
Thank you so much. I can always stock up.
So
on
we
that.
Got Ralph and Big J. Who's the pretty girl? Right, there?
So Big J actually is James because a little swap out last minute.
I'm medium girl, James.
James.
Medium James.
There's right, James, and the pretty girl is Shannon.
Shannon, hi, Shannon.
Although we lovingly refer to her as Tits McGee.
I have a new song called Tits. It's a great song. You want to hear a song, Tits? You guys can sing the chorus if you're worthy of it. Tits!
I think I got
so
the
glad
lyrics.
I record early.
Can you hear that guitar tone? Does that guitar tone there?
Yeah, it's there. It's a little overmodulated, but we can hear it.
Story of my life, overmodulated and full screen. Story of my life, since 1948.
All right, hold on 1 second. I'm almost ready to go here, kids.
See, now that's the problem. You're almost ready to go. I've been going. I just gave you the greatest opening, and you didn't even capture.
Oh, we recorded it.
Wait, I
you guys
recorded.
Had to do a podcast.
Ted, we recorded it. We don't fuck around. We
all right.
It.
God bless you. Then you capture. I'll see you later. Drive safely.
When you came
I've
in
never been more excited in my life.
You know what's funny, Ted? Years ago, I saw the band Whitesnake on stage, and they did Tush by ZZ Top,
but
they changed it to Tits.
Good song, good title, good variation. That's jazz. Improvise, adapt, and overcome. And when in doubt, whip it out.
Hey, that got me in trouble 3 times. Okay, so it's about 40 minutes, conversational, very free-flowing. The only pre-planned question of this show ever, one of them you're not going to have an answer to.
But that'll be the day.
Well, wait till you hear what the question is. The question is,
wait till you hear the answer.
Your first experience, this is not till the end of the show, but your first experience with sex, drugs, and rock and roll. And I know you've never done any drugs in your life. So,
well, you know, the problem with the sex, drugs, and rock and roll is that the sex is really critical. The rock and roll is really critical. But when you do the drugs, you forget all the important shit. So I have a great memory. I started rocking probably by the time I was 2 years old, that would be almost 1950. So I've always avoided anything that inspires drool, spittle, stumbling, puking, and especially one of my favorite parties, dying. So I've always been against chemical warfare, you know, inflicted upon oneself. I told Jimi Hendrix he was going to die. I told Keith Moon he was going to die. I told John Belushi he was going to die. I told Bon Scott he was going to die. And they insisted on drooling, puking, stumbling, and dying. It broke my fucking heart.
I can hear that. But also, by the way, if you do sex right, at least 3 of those things happen. The drooling,
Yeah, but that's positive. That's drool in the asset column. I'm condemning drool in the liability column. By the way, all that pontification I just gave you, Keith Richards completely blows that theory out of the water.
Of course. All right, we're going to get started right now. It is the SDR show, the Sex, Drugs, and Rock and Roll show. I am Ralph Sutton. Back with me once again, James Mattern, filling in, doing the right thing with a semi-made bed. It's not as nice as I'd like to see it, but it's good enough.
It's difficult here.
Whatever that is, I don't like it. Shannon is here. Buddy. Now, I mean, what do you say about this guy? Six fucking decades in rock and roll, the true Motor City madman, singer, guitarist, a very, very well-established vegan. Just kidding. And the funniest thing, I will just start by this. I've interviewed you a few times over the years. I doubt you'll remember me. But what I love, before we even start this interview, I already know how it's going to go. Why? Anytime we did an interview with you back in my old show called The Tour Bus, they said, you can't just give Ted 5 minutes. It's got to be at least a half hour or it's not going to go well. And it's fucking Ted Nugent. How are you, buddy?
Yeah, half hour. That's just the opening first question. Ralph, James, Shannon, you deserve me. If you love sex, drugs, and rock and roll, I'll take the rock and roll and the sex. You guys can have the drugs.
Yeah, you know what's funny, by the way? I say that all the time on the show because I don't do any drugs. So I make up for it in the other two as much as I can. That's just been the way the show's been since we started. We just had fellow Detroit people on the show. We had Alice Cooper on. We had Susie Quattro on. So now we have you on. We got the trifecta of Detroit legends.
Well, not really. You haven't had Mitch Ryder on or Johnny Bonanjic or Jimmy McCarty. And you got Brownsville Station. You got my buddy Michael Lutz. You got Dick Wagner and the Frost. Of course, Dick Wagner.
Let me have my brag.
That's a good brag, but it's an incomplete one. And I'm here to help. Uncle Ted loves you madly. So I'm willing to fill in the blanks. Never use blanks, by the way. So I feel welcome on your show because I am 72 years clean and sober. I'm rocking my balls into a firestorm of grinding, grooving Motown, James Brown, Little Richard, outrageous rhythm and blues rock and roll. So I can fulfill all the sex and the rock and roll parts for you. It's my pleasure. It's my absolute honor.
I'm so glad that you say that. First of all, you know what's interesting? I say this every week, so I apologize to our fans that listen to the show every week. I do deep dives. I really want to get to learn the person. When I had you on my radio show years ago, the few times, it's very superficial interview. Why? We're going to do 10 minutes on the air at most because it's radio. It was music radio, not talk radio like you've done. And it's bullshit. You can't really learn about someone in a 7 to 10 minute interview. So I go and let me spend a few days watching interviews, reading articles, listening to the music, and really getting into the headspace. And the thing that I found so fascinating, I found an interview with you from 1978, long fucking time ago. And you were talking to someone, it would be like I'm talking to you right now. What do I mean by that? The hunting, the shooting, the music, the sex, it looks like, oh, this is just Ted Nugent. It's not like you found hunting late in life or you found all this shit. This has been you since you were you. You were you.
Ralph, am I the luckiest son of a bitch that ever tackled the American dream? I was born in 1948. And just think of that aura, that era, that environment, the topography of electric guitars that Les Paul had just invented. So once I heard Chuck Berry and Bo Diddley, and of course the Ventures, and eventually the Beach Boys playing Chuck Berry licks, and then the Stones and the Beatles and the Kinks and the Who brought that American black grind and that American black soul music. I mean, remember the Stones and Beatles' first album had Motown songs, Bo Diddley songs, and Chuck Berry songs. So I was in that vortex before the British invasion. I was already hooked on it with my combo. I had a combo at the age of 9, and we would play, you know, the church basement and VFW halls and the Elks Lodge and just experimenting with that music. So I found that passion that you can't let up on it when you pursue it with everything you got. And at the same time, Ralph and James and Shannon, my dad was already a bow hunter following this great man named Fred Bear. So I grew up on the Rouge River on the edge of Detroit, which was a game wildlife paradise. And I was always fascinated by the wildlife, the bird songs and the activities and the patterns and the habits of wildlife, trying to kill it with my bow and arrow for dinner, which is almost impossible, especially as a young, dumb, crazy, rock and roll, high energy dirt dog. But that so imprinted on me that here it is 2021, and I played my guitar this morning. I shot my bow this morning. I shot a squirrel in the eyeball with my 22 for my Catahoula. I live a ranching, farming, outdoor, rock and roll, freedom, independent, middle finger on fire, killing game with a sharp stick life, and it's so exciting. I remain more stimulated by those pulsations of musical creativity and outrage and the stealth, the samurai zen of getting close to an animal that God designed not to let guitar players get close to. This is so, especially in the clusterfuck of 2021 and the recent times, you have to escape the stupidity and the crime and the corruption and the hate and the cancel culture and all the self-inflicted scourges that we're living in. And when I get my bow and arrow, none of that exists. When I play my guitar, none of that exists. So I cleanse my soul with those passions for my entire life. Say hallelujah. How lucky am I?
I love that your passion about it is as much as it is now as it was. That interview, I guess, was about 40
years ago. Yeah, I think more
ago.
So, man. I think
let
more
me ask
so.
You this. In I don't want to say I know you, but I feel like I've learned a little bit about you in these last few years. I've had you on. I forget what albums they were, the old albums that you were on when you came on my show, the old days. But how are you able, knowing what I know about you, to keep fucking quiet and sneak up on an animal, knowing how your energy is? How the fuck do you do that?
That's the definitive proof that I am one bad motherfucker. Because if you can take Mr. Gonzo, fire-breathing goofball, that you can cook marshmallows on the flames coming out of his ass at 100 yards whenever the rock and roll fire is going on, then that was very difficult for me. That was a challenge that I know the man in the arena, and I know the incredible athleticism of the hockey guys and the basketball guys and even the golf guys, the focus, the hand-eye spirit coordination of a Tiger Woods. I understand that my grandson was the state champion golfer in Michigan at 18. I know that focus, but it is about that focus. I had to so learn to shut the fuck up, calm the fuck down, sit still, and pay attention. Now stop and think of those parameters that Mr. Gonzo had to accomplish. But here's the son of a bitch. I did it. I started killing deer in my teenage years, which takes an indescribable, even though I've described it pretty adequately, it takes an indescribable element of awareness, stealth, silence, conscientious reverence for God's creation that will supply that food if you put your heart and soul into being a real reasoning predator. I consider myself like Crazy Horse or Cochise with the loud guitar, except I put the loud guitar down and I try to turn into those aboriginal spirit warriors that really is Natty Bumpo. It really is Daniel Boone, Davy Crockett. I referenced the Native Americans, you know, Sitting Bull. Those guys were stealthy, dangerous men because they had to kill food for, they had to kill animals for food, clothing, shelter, medicine, tools, weapons, and mostly, and here's the clincher, this is the ultimate answer to your question, spirit. My song is Spirit of the Wild. My TV show is Spirit of the Wild.
Congratulations on 100 episodes, by the way.
Yes, and so I improvise, adapt, and overcome. I can be the most dangerous, obnoxious, outrageous, irreverent prick with a guitar better than almost anybody but Little Richard. Little Richard beat me at that. But then I can turn into the reasoning predator that literally I'll sit in a tree September, October, November, December, January, February. Every day I'm either in a duck blind, silent, or I'm in a tree stand, silent. So I've mastered the extreme outrageous intensity, irreverence, dynamic of rock and roll unleashed. And I'm not bragging, but I've also really nailed down that stealthy hunter, that bow hunter, that Cochise that we all have in us, but we have to call upon it sometimes. And I have all my life.
I would, by the way, disagree a little bit that you weren't bragging. You said you were the second greatest guitarist of all time. I would say that was a little braggy. That's just my opinion.
Well, I'm my favorite guitarist. I'll tell you that.
Now, the question that I want to ask you a couple things about it, because look, hunting and all this stuff obviously is a tender subject for a lot of people, right?
Yeah, aren't
not
they
everybody,
stupid?
Right? So, question one. Do you ever hunt for just sport, or is it always for food?
Well, that's a great question. And listen closely, because I've explained this many times, and it seems to go right over everybody's head that is
Well, I'm
addicted.
Not that smart, Ted. Just so you know.
Well, I can tell you are, because you have me on your show. listen very closely, and I can't be more sincere or knowledgeable on the subject. You can't hunt without sport. It is so challenging. The archery challenge, the aim small, miss small marksmanship, breathing, one with your hand-eye spirit coordination. When you drop that hammer, it's more intense than golf or samurai stuff. It's a moment of oneness with that, whether it's a firearm or especially with an archery. So you can't hunt without sport.
That's a wrong statement. Maybe let me ask this. Maybe rephrase it in a different way.
Well,
do you ever not eat what you've killed?
No, that's no. And I've hunted all my life. I guide hundreds of hunters a year, every weekend, September, October, November, December, in my birthday, my New Year's hunt, since the late 70s. I've never met a hunter, and I've met more than maybe anybody that ever lived. We cherish that sacred, organic flesh. It's the best meat protein available to mankind. While we're balancing the herds to safeguard the rejuvenation qualities of a renewable habitat, which is where our air, soil, and water quality comes from, wildlife habitat. So it's always sport, and it's always meat. Now, when I shoot a coyote, I don't eat it. When I shoot a bobcat, I've eaten it in the past, but I shoot them to balance the predator numbers and also for their luxurious fur, which is the greatest gift to a grandchild. Plus, why purchase oil-based fake fur that ruins the environment when I can get a renewable bobcat or coyote hide that is purely renewable, not hurting the species, actually helping the species by eliminating rabies, distemper, and mange? I mean, it's such simple science. Even the Motor City Madman can figure this out. So it's all sport, it's all meat, it's all trophy, and it's all fun.
It's
you
all
can't
those things
hunt
wrapped
without
into
those.
One. Yeah, I mean, I'm a city boy puss, so I'm asking as an idiot. I'm a neophyte in the world, so I'm just asking on that.
And I gave you the answer. It's a good question.
I like the answer.
A lot of people, they've been so indoctrinated that we're shooting Bambi. Well, who would be so soulless to reduce these precious, living, breathing, alive creatures to the level of a cartoon character? I find it really embarrassing that people can be that stupid. So hunting is perfect environmentalism. Case closed.
I don't disagree. By the way, I don't disagree with a lot of that anyway. But what I also like about what I've seen by watching you, whether you agree with your politics, whether you agree with your gun stance, whatever it is, you've made it clear. Look, this is how I believe. I'd love to change your mind. But if I don't change your mind, we could still be friends like you and Tom Morello.
Absolutely.
Tom Morello's on the other side of almost every issue that you're on. You're friends.
I've got a lot of, I've been hanging around with every imaginable variation of the human species all my life. I mean, that right now with the cancel culture and political correctness and the culture war hate and nastiness, I mean, I got black bass players. I got Hispanic musicians. I got gay buddies. I write with Desmond Child. I get along great with anybody, anywhere, anytime. And if you don't want to own a gun, I'll help you not own one. If you want to eat vegan diet, I'll make sure the smoke from my barbecue doesn't get on your tofu. I'm the real liberal. I'm the real tolerant quesera. Live your own life. I will support anybody's choice as long as it doesn't hurt somebody, as long as it doesn't interfere. See, the left versus right. You don't have to own a gun. You don't have to hunt. But the other side has an army that will say, we don't like guns and you can't own one. We don't believe in hunting and you can't hunt. Shut the fuck up. I mean, it's just so stupid. I mean, there, and by the way, the sex, drugs, and rock and roll, all those idiots are either historically or currently on the drugs because it makes you so stupid that you can't figure out simple sustained yield, fawns in the spring making room in the habitat. I mean, all my haters are either stoned or they act like they're stoned.
I also, by the way, feel that, I don't want to get too political on this, but a two-party system just doesn't make sense anymore anyway, but let's move on from that.
Amen.
A little bit. I want to tell you the thing that I found fascinating, other things I didn't realize You started playing guitar at 7. Your first show was at 11.
Yeah.
You were just living and breathing embodiment of rock and roll from a child.
Well, I was bombarded with it. I mean, you talk to Wayne Kramer, the MC5. We were both born at the same time. We had Joe Podorsick at the Capitol School of Music on Grand River in Detroit. He was our guitar teacher from the Motown Funk Brother, Hitsville, USA, the Snake Pit. So I was in a vortex of music intensity. The Detroit was just on fire, both literally and figuratively, with the emotions and the societal sways and the ethnicity mingling. And all of our heroes were black. It was so authoritative. It was so authentic. You find anybody from Detroit, and I think most of the guys from LA and Chicago and New York, everywhere else, it really was Bo Diddley and Chuck Berry and Little Richard and Jerry Lee Lewis that brought forth the Howlin' Wolf and the Muddy Waters and the Lightnin' Hopkins and the Mose Allison authoritative, emotional, defiant, irreverent, sex-driven music. And they intensified it because Les Paul electrified the guitar. So quite honestly, I was actually beating on a guitar. My mom, before she passed, said by the time I was 5 or 6, I was beating on a guitar trying to emulate the Ventures, if that was the right time. And then by the time I was 7, I started taking lessons. And Joe Podorsick, who I still keep in touch with, what's that?
Oh, wow.
That's almost 67 years ago. So yeah, and then I had a combo called the Royal High Boys. It was named after a collar at the Northland Mall. What was the name of that? It was like a greaser, like a grease ball Soul Brother clothing store. Anyhow, there was a high boy, like, you know, Elvis had high collars. So we called ourselves the Royal High Boys. I think it was me and a drummer, and then we added a bass player. But then I started the Lourdes in 1958, and I can name all the guys, incredible musicians, way better than I was. But we were inspired by Billy Lee and the Rivieras at the Walled Lake Casino when the Lourdes opened up for this brand new band from Detroit called Martha and the Vandellas. Are you kidding
crazy.
Me?
That's
and then crazy. Billy Lee and the Rivieras turned into Mitch Ryder and the Detroit Wheels. And I keep in touch with those guys to this day. So yeah, if you really pay attention to your health and your priorities, and you try to do good stuff and have positive communication with the people in your life, especially these incredible virtuosos that I've been surrounded with. Yeah, it was a firestorm that started right away. And it really was guitars and bows and arrows and firearms and dogs and girls and wilderness and this outrageous, youthful, preteen experimentation with this rhythm and blues rock and roll. And it's alive
you,
today.
If you did the drugs, you might have confused the dogs with the girls at one point, and that would have been a really bad situation.
I understand it is a mistake, yes.
You know, I've never seen James look so intense. James?
This is everything I've ever wanted, sir, just so you know. A couple quick things. First of all, I feel manlier just listening to you. Like, I was going to do push-ups and shit. Like, I feel like I don't have to take any testosterone. I'll just call girls who said I was soft, and they will just tell the difference just after, like, 20 minutes with you. Also,
that's my gift.
Thank you, sir. Also, I think it's a good thing that you don't do drugs. I feel like cocaine would quit being cocaine if you did it. Like,
can
it would
you imagine?
Like,
nope. Can you? Because nope. I've always been heavily armed everywhere I go.
Oh my God.
And if I did drugs, I could have snapped, because when I snapped, I made great music. But, I got to tell you, wherever you've seen me, I've always been armed. Since I graduated from high school, I've always had a gun on me. I have a clean handkerchief, a pocket knife, a bunch of guitar picks, a wallet, and a gun and some extra ammo. To me, it's the most pragmatic, utilitarian, self-sufficient Boy Scout prepared lifestyle. And I am a wild motherfucker, but I'm a conscientious wild motherfucker. I don't tread on others. I don't demand anything from others. All the Amboy Dukes, everybody around me liked to smoke dope, and they got into the cocaine and the LSD, and I tolerated it, but I didn't indulge because I saw them losing their musical fire. I saw them forgetting arrangements and not tuning and maybe not even showing up on time, much less getting out of bed. So I saw what my dad taught me, and I should have been a rebel because I was so against my dad's ultra discipline that I probably was the ultimate candidate to rebel by jumping into this new bullshit called peer pressure. But I've always been a cocky son of a bitch that nobody, I don't have any peers, and no one's capable of pressuring me except Mrs. Nugent. So I was this individual guy that cut firewood at deer camp when I was 5 and 6 years old, that I brought water from the river, that I was part of a team, a family team, to be an asset to the camp and to our home and do my chores from the time I could walk. So, you know, you call it manly. I just call it human. And I think a human should aspire to be an asset to their family, their community, their band, their business, their country, their fellow man, the environment.
I have to say, I'm sorry, Ted, next time there is another pandemic or world shutdown, I'm coming to move in with you because I feel safer.
Oh, I have chores for you.
Let me ask you this. So a couple other things going back to history lessons for Ted Nugent. When you first started, you weren't a singer yet. You were a guitarist exclusively.
Not really. No, I got to tell you, Ralph, I did sing Johnny B. Goode and O Carroll, and I sang some of those early songs. I remember playing Route 66 and singing that. I use the term singing generously because even my guitar playing, I consider that pretty generous because I was a stumble bum. It took me a long time to really become reasonably proficient. So I've always sang in various times and places and levels, but I also realized I was writing songs that would be better delivered with a real specialty vocalization, like a Derek St. Holmes on Stranglehold.
Derek, who was great. So, but there was a day or time that you decided, okay, this is going to be me now. I'm just going to be me. Do you remember why that happened?
Yes, it's really a great story. It's a moment. It's a human moment in time where you're busting your ass. You're working hard, and I don't care if you're a rancher or a teacher or a welder or whatever you pursue, life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness. But the Amboy Dukes played 300 to 350 concerts a year from the time I graduated from high school, and I'm so high energy that I was indefatigable. I just never ran out of fire and piss and vinegar. I couldn't wait to get to the next gig, and I drove the truck and I set up the equipment. I changed the oil. I had to buy the tires. I fixed the amps. I soldered the guitar cables. I was like the nanny, manager, roadie, booking agent, and it got to a point where I really loved my fellow musicians, Andy Solomon with the Amboy Dukes, Rick Lober on keyboards, Dave Palmer, Gregor Rama, Steve Farmer, John Brake. I mean, what a gifted gang of teenagers that had unlimited musicality and musical adventure. But I wanted to play grinding stuff. I was really possessed by Chuck Berry and Bo Diddley, and I thought the guitar should be the theme. Mm-hmm. The guitar should be there. Here's how the song starts, and the guitar part, whether it's Satisfaction or Paperback Writer or Walk This Way or Cat Scratch Fever or these songs, I like a song that starts with a guitar pattern. Mm-hmm. But I didn't want to step on Andy or Rick with their keyboards because they're phenomenal. I mean, just phenomenal. And I would outline my dream musical presentation. But if Gregor Rama is playing bass, maybe the greatest bass player that ever lived, God rest his soul, I couldn't say, you know, you have to play it like this. I go, Greg, this is the way I see it, but Greg it for me. And Dave, this is how... I mouth off the drum parts, but I go, Dave, you're the god of drums. This is how I see it, but Dave Palmer it for me. So I've always been a band player. But it got to the point where the industry kept saying, well, you have to have these melodies and you have to have a chorus, a catchy chorus. You know, the old AM radio, Hitsville, USA, which, by the way, I can't not mention that AM radio, when Journey to the Center of the Mind was the number one song, so was Sunshine of Your Love and Born to Be Wild and Purple Haze and Hush. Think of those killer, honest-to-God rock and roll masterpieces that were AM radio hits. But then it started getting real sappy, which is the ultimate delivery with current country music. By the way, the new country biggest song, Hey Hey, We're the Monkees. Anyhow, so I didn't want to go this poppy route, but everybody was pressuring me. So in 73, we did probably over 300 concerts. And I literally went, I'm tired, guys. I don't want keyboards. I play a Gibson Birdland, which I just put to rest because I think it's She's Pregnant. I play a Gibson Birdland, which is a hollow body, which has just an outrageous spread of tone. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if you want me to show you what I mean, even though I got this incredible Holy Grail 59 Les Paul.
But do when you hear Ted Nugent play guitar, who's going to say no to that?
You know, when you play honky tonk. Or whenever Chuck Berry does it. Well, you can see I'm already ruining it in the traditional sense because I got the ka 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 ka. So when I play honky tonk, well, that wasn't big enough, so I went. I mean, get the fuck out of here. Look at that fucking,
Ted,
I was going to run 10 miles. I was going to run 10 miles after this. I'm doing a full marathon now. If you play two more bars of that goddamn song, I'm getting a fucking full marathon in, Ted.
I tell you, I can't be held responsible for the teepee that you wake up with every morning for the next month. Anyhow, the point being is I wanted my Birdland to spread. I wanted the guitar to own. Not... unlike Cream or Hendrix or Grand Funk Railroad or the greatest bands, I think ZZ Top culminated it. So I wanted this guitar to, when I write a song, it's the guitar spread. My bass player is so big and greasy and grinding, and my drummers are so multi-rhythmical and syncopated. So when I finally decided, I said, Gabe Magno was my keyboardist that year. And I said, Gabe, I love you so much. You'd bring so much fire and enrichment to these songs and the music. But I don't want any more keyboards. It was hard for me because I love the guy. Mm-hmm. And I said, we're going to drop the name Amboy Dukes. The booking agent over the years said, you got to call it Ted Nugent the Amboy Dukes because everybody's coming to see this crazy feedback, fire-breathing, bow and arrow guy on stage. So we changed it to so we could get a bigger gig, more money for the gig. And the promoters and all the club owners, everybody said, you got to add your name to it. So in 73, at the end of that tour, I said, you know what? I hunt every year, but I grab 2 days here. And then I grab, maybe I'll get a day over there. Well, when you hunt with a bow and arrow, you can't do it in 2 days. You got to learn the animals. You got to go from Gonzo to Stealth Boy. Mm-hmm. So I said, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to take October and November off. I'm going to go hunting every day. This was an epiphany. And I told the guys, I said, Vic, I want you back on drums. Rob, you're awesome. Rob Grange on bass guitar, but I just want to do three-piece. I want to sing Call of the Wild. I want to sing Loaded for Bear. I want to sing Baby, Please Don't Go. I want to sing Living in the Woods. I want to sing Good Natured Emma. All these songs that I was so proud of, but I wanted the guitar to spread and ring and make noise and the feedback of the Birdland. So I went to Colorado in my little Ford Bronco all by myself with my Boy Scout mess kit, and I pitched a pup tent, and I got a deer with my bow and arrow and shot some grouse with my bow and arrow. And I'm going to tell you, after a week of that, I went, my God, I can't not do this. Mm-hmm. I can't get a day hunting here and a day there. You have to live this spirit and escape the insanity that all the guys were escaping with drugs and alcohol, and it was not serving them well. So I came back early and I said, I'm dropping the name Amboy Dukes. I got this song called Stranglehold. I got this song called Snakeskin Cowboys. I got this killer song called Motor City Madhouse. I got this beautiful jazz song called You Make Me Feel Right at Home. Just a beautiful jazzy song. And everybody goes, well, you can't play jazz. I said, fuck you. I'll play whatever I want. This is the Ted Nugent Band. It's got my name on it. I'll drive over your face with my Bronco if I feel like it. So it was a moment in time where I decided I really had a personal statement to make. And Rob and Vic agreed. The Great White Buffalo song was the most popular one we had with Journey to the Center of the Mind and all these outrageous, noisy licks that I was coming up with. So that was the beginning of dropping the Amboy Dukes name and just going solo because I wanted, and I can sing down and dirty. I mean, some of my favorite vocalists are the Paul Butterfield Blues Band with they're grunting and grinding. Even Little Richard, even though I had the greatest voice in the world, and inspired everybody. But his greatest moments were his squalors and his screams, like I did on Wango Tango. Mm-hmm. And you call up, you summon this fire-breathing beast to deliver your lyrics that you believe in, whether they're sincere, serious lyrics, which I think I've had a few, or it's just outrageous fuck you lyrics. I've had a whole bunch. But I wanted to make my statement. So Lou Futterman came along, saw the band as a three piece, and went, well, holy shit, this is a... Then the audience, we sold out Soldiers and Sailors Memorial halls all across the country, 3,000-4,000 people without any hit records. And I was leaving a path of total warfare behind me of people that love the energy and the fire and the attitude and the tightness of the band. So that's when we signed with Epic Records, and Tom Worman took the helm, captured that with Tony Reale, just an amazing engineer. And that's when I brought Derek St. Holmes in, because as much as I love singing Stranglehold, the way that guy sings is just phenomenal. So I had him sing that, and the rest is history, as we say. 40 million records later, though, 5 million of those was Damn Yankees, and a couple million were Amboy Dukes. But I couldn't be more proud and more invigorated, and not just my music, but the musicians that created it with me. Mm-hmm. These guys are the baddest motherfuckers that ever plugged in. Jason Heartless on drums the last 4 or 5 years, Greg Smith on bass for the last 15 plus years. These guys are just monster, soulful, work ethic American warriors of musicality. So I go back to my first statement when we first got on here. I'm a lucky, lucky guitar player.
You make this such a difficult interview. Just kidding. All right, before we go any further, man, these guys have been a supporter for a long time. So it means you guys are doing the right thing by supporting the sponsors that support us. It is Yo Kratom. You go to YoKratom.com. It's very simple. It's home of the $60 kilo. I can tell you that if you use Kratom, first of all, hopefully you're over 21 when you're listening to this ad. You could spend double or even triple, and you don't know the quality. If you go to YoKratom.com, it is high-quality curated Kratom at wholesale prices direct to your door. Incredibly low prices. $60 kilos. Makes it simple. Makes it easy. Go to YoKratom.com. I've said it many, many times. Shannon's a big fan. If you've never tried Kratom, you don't have to start it, whatever you want to do. But if you just want to check it out, go to YoKratom.com. No more buying it from a gas station. No more buying it from a bodega. You're paying way too much for shitty quality. Here you know it's going to be good quality Kratom. Tons of different unique blends. Some proprietary to YoKratom directly. So if you go to YoKratom.com, you can do it right now, and that is $60 kilos all day, $60 kilos. All right, let's get back into the show. So let me ask you this. You just touched on this a little bit, and I want to get your side of this. I'm curious to hear. There has been this rumor for years about a third Damn Yankees record that was recorded, that is somewhere, that has never been released. We had Damon Johnson on not that long ago, who was involved at some point, I think after Tommy left, or not exactly sure the logistics of that. But I'm curious your take on that and as to why it never came out and if it would ever be released, even as like a, hey, look, we know this ain't the best album ever, if that's what you think, but why don't we just give it to the world anyway? Like, I'm just curious what your thoughts are on that.
Well, my thoughts are accurate thoughts. Damon, another example. Damon Johnson, I mean, talking about a virtuoso.
Oh, he's the greatest. Yeah,
talking about a positive, spirited music god. I mean, there's another example of the people I've been surrounded with. Well, the Damn Yankees couldn't have been more proud. Tommy Shaw, soulful monster music fire. Jack Blades, he is music. The guy, I think he shits in key. I mean, these guys are so musical. You can hear a rock fall down a mountain, they'll go, I think that's a B flat.
Yeah, and also thanks to Damn Yankees, you will always be known as the guy that blocks bullets with his guitar.
Yes, I think I did that last week in Waco. And Michael Cardelloni on drums, just another phenomenal virtuoso. And again, not just virtuosos musical, but great gentlemen, great fiery, independent, rugged, productive, fun guys. So point being is that we are so proud of the first two records. Ron Nevison did a great job. And the entire team was just so in love with the collaboration and the direction of the music, the diversity of the music, the authenticity of the music. And we decided to do a third album because we were on fire. I mean, we did 200 concerts a year. I drove them nuts because I still took the hunting season off. And we decided to go in the studio. We had some killer songs. And I can't remember the guy's name that they brought in. I know he had a reputation. He had produced some good music in the past. But the last thing you want to do if you work with me or the power, the identity, and the authority, musical authority of Jack Blades, Tommy Shaw, Michael Cardelloni, you don't hire us and then not let us be us. Mm-hmm. If you're going to buy a new Dodge Challenger, Hellcat, Red Eye, Wide Body, Super Sport, you don't put it in low gear and putz down the highway. I want to smell race fuel. I want to see burning rubber. I want G-forces. I want people reaching for a $100 bill in the sun visor, but they can't grab it because the G-forces are pinning you to the fucking seat, which is, by the way, what I do on a weekly basis. So we went in and we started recording, and we had these songs that had the grind. It had that black soulfulness that all four of us, we worshipped that James Brown tightness, the musical authority of all of our black heroes, because there are no white heroes. And the producer goes, that sounds too much like the last Damn Yankees. I think we had to change. I go, well, wait a minute. If you want something that doesn't sound like the Damn Yankees, I recommend you go get a band that isn't the Damn Yankees.
Right.
Because we are the Damn Yankees. And if you try to change us, somebody's going to get hurt in this studio. Not that I would be mean-spirited. But we went along, and again, we all went, okay, yeah, okay. Change of direction. I don't remember what, it doesn't matter, disco, grunge, goth, whatever. I don't, who gives a shit? Music is music, and it's in my soul, and I'm going to play it in total defiance of trends or current formulas. I think you noticed that about me. And so does Tommy and Jack and Michael. So the long story short, Damon, Tommy was a part of this record. He was a motherfucker. Mm-hmm. And Damon came in because he had great song ideas. He co-wrote some of the songs with my solo album at the time, and he's just a musical, you know, son of Little Richard, Howlin' Wolf. He really has that authority. And so he was going to come in and kind of bring a little different flavor as a real songwriter, real rock and roll rhythm and blues guy. But the producer kept nixing all the things that we liked the best.
Okay.
And it always has to do with grunt and grind and pulse and groove, tightness, and all that stuff that makes the Damn Yankees and all your favorite bands, all my favorite bands. We could go ahead and list them, but we know who they are because they have that spirit to their music. And this guy was trying to change us into something we weren't. So at one point we put our foot down. I had a bumper crop of fuck yous that year. So we rolled a few out and we said, there's no way. The way this is going, the way this is being recorded is so not us that right. It will never see the light of day.
So you're now, so that, you're that being said, ever releasing it.
That being said, I guarantee you, if Jack and Tommy and Michael and my schedule could ever be coordinated in amongst the Sticks and the Night Ranger and the Leonard Skinner and my solo stuff, and even as the words are coming out of my mouth, I'm going, I don't think that's possible. But if it were possible and we could manipulate a calendar, ladies and gentlemen, when the four of us get in a room, it's not a matter of moments, not a matter of minutes. It's a matter of seconds. The minute we plug in, noise starts happening, and Tommy will play this guitar thing, and I'll go, yeah, I know where that's going. Jack, and all of a sudden, this grinding Motown Stax Volt, you know, Wrecking Crew, Grind, Stones, ZZ, Ted Nugent, Sticks, Night Ranger, Damn Yankees, things it within seconds. So if we could coordinate a schedule, fire would happen, guaranteed.
But regardless of that, you're saying you don't think that that album that was recorded, that's living somewhere, would ever be released?
Not in its current construction or content. The song's foundations were just wonderful. Mm-hmm. I mean, just monster grinding patterns and licks and vocal histrionics. It was awesome. But it be there was a governor put on that hot rod. Mm-hmm. I don't want less horsepower. I want maximum horsepower. I don't want reduced velocity. I want maximum velocity. And even a song like High Enough, which is really a beautiful, soulful, I don't know what genre you would put it in, but it's a soulful ballad song, but it has scrotum. I mean, even that song, as pretty as it is, it's almost like a T-Rex scrotum smacking you upside the head because the way these guys deliver that song and the way I played the guitar on it and the solo and Michael's groove. So Damn Yankees is a great, great chapter. I couldn't be more proud.
So now, James, you'll give a question before I move on.
Yeah, I just want to say, Mr. Nugent, I don't know my real dad. If you would have been my father, things would be so much better now. And is there any chance you were in Vegas in 77 and you met an Italian girl named Joanne? We can take this off the air, but I would I forget the last 43 years. Let's start new now. I want to go fucking hunting with you. I want to listen to nothing but Detroit music. I'll throw away all my punk bands from New York and SoCal. I'm starting new with you. I've never done an interview where the guest had pulled out a guitar, a gun, and a knife. I'm waiting for the big closer of either a bass or a bazooka. I don't know what
on. Wait, here. This is, I'll go. Well, I appreciate that, James. And all I can say is ditto, young man, ditto. And when people call my office over the years, and they say, I represent a young lady from Syracuse, and she thinks Ted Nugent is her father, and my office goes, probably.
Oh, now he's off camera going to get something. Is he going to murder something on air?
So anyhow, I really do shoot my bow and play my guitar every year. And I have this mechanical release that's almost as precise as a sniper firearm trigger. But this, even though it's a compound, it looks exotic. It's still archery. I still have to know where I'm shooting. I got a little orange tape over here at about 10 feet. And you have to go from the crazy gonzo, you know, even as I say crazy gonzo, there is a samurai ultra focus when you're writing a lick and playing a song and performing. It is as focused as anything available to mankind. Believe me, it looks outrageous and flamboyant and out of control, and it is all those things, but it's extremely focused. Mm-hmm. And that goes into my archery. When I leave the sex, drugs, and rock and roll interview momentarily with Shannon, James, and Ralph, and I can focus on this little orange tape on my target, and I can literally zone in. When I come to full draw, the beauty of archery is at full draw, there's no Hillary Clinton. It's so beautiful.
Can I just say that we have to just take your word for it that you hit the orange tape? Maybe it went out the window. We don't fucking know.
No, believe me, it's right in the orange tape.
So here's my, I want to go on a couple of other quick questions. I know we don't have all the time in the world with you.
Yeah, go nuts, man.
We have this question here where you took about, I'm going to say 7 years from albums, which usually you're pretty consistent with albums. 2007, you stopped for a while, right? And then you came out, I think, 7-8 years later. And then it was The Music Made Me Do It came out. And then now the new album that's coming out any day now, I guess, called Handsome Devil, which you say Donald Trump named for you.
Yes. Something
re-energized you because you were quoted in an article saying, I'm re-energized to start playing music again.
No, I got to tell you, Ralph, I don't think it was 7 years because I had a Love Grenade. I had a Crave Man. I killer songs.
From Love Grenade to Shut Up and Jam was 7 years.
Was it Shut Up? Really? Love Grenade to Shut Up and Jam, 7 years.
Yeah.
Boy, it felt like a week or two. No, and as far as re-energized, believe me, I did have knee surgery right before Shut Up and Jam. Wasn't that right? I went on tour for the Shut Up and Jam with Derek, by the way. He did great. There was a bit of a rehab era there. Oh, okay. When I had both of my knees replaced at the same time, which proves I'm out of my fucking mind. But I don't think musically I ever needed any re-energizing. I always play. I'm always writing songs. But if there was that big of a gap between recordings, it's because so many other things were going on. Okay. I mean, I'm a dad, I'm a grandpa, I'm a rancher, I put in crops, I work on tractors, I run a trap line and catch varmints and skin them. So I really have, my life is so cool. It's just crazy cool.
But let me ask you, so this is what leads to this question, okay? And okay. So you, this is your quote. You say, a lot of people say, how come you don't make albums anymore? And you say, I just made a new one. At the time, it was the quote for The Music Made Me Do It, right? Yeah. And I think what has happened, because it's funny, your message of who you are, as I said in the top of this interview, hasn't changed. In the 70s to today, Ted Nugent, right? But these days, it is obviously the political landscape, the social justice that we are in, the cancel culture that we are in. Very often, you're known more for your political provocation more so than your music to younger people today. A lot, not everyone, of course.
That could be, well,
you even said it yourself, because you said a lot of people said, how come you don't make music anymore?
Yeah.
Because you become known for political. Does that make sense?
It could be in some ways, because, you know, stick with me here. This is an experiment in self-government. This is a...
Right. Well, we are. That's what America is.
Unprecedented... We the people in charge. And I think as a guitar player, I qualify for experimenting as a we the people a participant. So I've always been participating. But when I saw the self-inflicted, hate-filled scourge of political correctness, which was basically just to celebrate lies and attack anybody that wouldn't lie with you. And it goes right to the simple thing of anti-hunting, animal rights, gun control. I think those are the tip of the culture war spear. And I was always in those crosshairs, and I wasn't about to be silent. I wasn't about to let these people get away with their lies and their hate against healthy wildlife and a healthy environment or the right to self-defense. I carry a gun and I eat venison. Two perfect things.
With the venison, I couldn't agree more. One of my favorite meats other than elk. I think elk is tastier.
Elk is big venison. So right. My point being is that I'm a gregarious guy. I go to the feed mill. I go to the sushi bar. I go to the Whole Foods. I hang out. I go to Starbucks on occasion. I go to this coffee shop. I hang out. I go to... my wife and I, we're active. We have lots of friends. I do a lot of charity work, so you're surrounded by the greatest people in the world.
Auction this weekend for charity, if I'm not mistaken, as well.
Yeah, well, we do something all the time for military, law enforcement, children's, and conservation charities. The point is that I'm approached on the street by everybody from preteens to guys older than me, which is really old. And
you ain't kidding.
It's about 50-50 that they bring up music, or thanks for standing up for my Second Amendment, or thanks for promoting conservation. Thanks, my kid was impacted by your clean and sober message. How could I not be confident when just nice people, and again, every color, every ethnicity, every walk of life, every strata, and they thank me for expressing what they believe. And that's a nice couple there. They have a nice little kid there. And they're thanking me. And they thank me because they saw me or heard me somewhere promoting the things that they believe in defiance of political correctness and the cancel culture. And
right. And also, you've always been, if you think about it, a sober Republican rock star is already... contradiction in terms in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
So you haven't changed. Again, the thing that spoke mostly true to me about you is how this has been you. It's not like you found this at 70. You know, this is you. So that to me makes it far more endearing than if you found it at 70 or whatever it is.
Well, and let's not discount when people discover an upgrade or an important issue or a passion, no matter how late. I get old guys that say, boy, I wish I would have started playing guitar earlier. And I go, well, how old are you? I'm 68 years old. Get a guitar. Start playing. Yeah. I mean, it's never too late. I've had so many people that see my passion and the fun factor, the smile factor from the mystical flight of the arrow. I've got thousands of people that took up archery, and God knows how many people that got a guitar and, you know, play Smoke in the Water and Catch Scratch Fever. So the input that I get, you know, I am not that smart, but I'm aware. And so every one of my statements, they're not opinions. Venison is food isn't an opinion.
Right.
Deer need to be harvested to balance the herd for next spring's productivity. That's not an opinion. That's science. Oh. Unarmed and helpless is unarmed and helpless. And everybody that gets raped and murdered and carjacked, they all have one thing in common. They were unarmed and helpless by regulations that didn't impact the perpetrator. If you want the anti-guns dream, they have it. It's called a gun-free zone. And that's where the most innocent lives are lost every time. So here's an idea. Let's get rid of gun-free zones and save all those innocent lives, combined with keeping violent people in the cage.
Well, I'm just going to say this in regards to the people that you inspired. Wang Dang Sweet Poontang made me really obsessed about vagina.
What a great, I got to play that lick. What kind of lick is that? I mean, come on.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
You know, so James, we're going to have to wrap soon. So any other questions you want to ask before I do the final question of the show?
Go nuts.
One quick thing, Ted. My boys back in Vegas, I told them I'd be on a pod with you, and they wanted me to try and get you to say this. I heard you on another podcast. It might have been Joe Rogan. Can you finish this quote for me? This is about your life. No drugs, no alcohol, and no...
No drugs, no alcohol, no tobacco, and no fat pussy. That shit will kill you.
That's a mic drop in my business right there.
The shit will kill you.
I had a friend that really, one of my close friends, I lost him to a fat pussy. It was a really sad time in my life.
I've been killed several times, sir. I've been killed several times.
He didn't come back. Really
you see, if I wasn't me, I would want to go see me. Because if you're not having fun with me, you got shit for brains.
Absolutely, sir.
All right, so we're going to do the questions right now, Shannon.
The first time ever I saw concert, did drugs, had sex.
It is the SDR show, the Sex, Drugs, and Rock and Roll show. We ask our guests this all the time. We start with rock and roll. Which this I'm very curious about. It's the first concert you went to see on your own volition. You started so young, so it's going to be weird because I don't know what show you went to see first.
I remember it like it was yesterday. Again, I'd never went to a concert growing up until I was 16 because I was always playing. I was always performing. I opened up for the Supremes and the Bo Brummels at Cobo Hall.
And you won a Battle of the Bands when you were like 12 or 13 or something.
Yeah, I was 14 years old. And then my dad got transferred to Illinois, and we moved there in 65. And I started the Amboy Dukes. But in 65, when we moved there, my heroes, my musical gods, other than the Funk Brothers and all those black Chuck and Bo and Little Richard and Jerry Lee Lewis, I'll let you tell Jerry Lee Lewis he's not black. So I had such love and fascination with Earl Elliott on bass, Billy Levice on lead vocals, Joe Kubrick on Gibson 335 through a Fender Twin, Earl Elliott with a Rickenbacker bass to an Ampeg B18. He wore black silk gloves. And Johnny Bonanjak on drums, are you kidding me? And Jimmy McCarty on a Gibson Birdland through a Fender Twin, though we eventually went to a Gretsch Country Gentleman. But they changed their name from Billy Lee and the Rivieras to Mitch Ryder and the Detroit Wheels.
Oh, wow,
when I left Detroit. And they did a concert at the auditorium. I can't remember the title of the auditorium, but I had just started the Amboy Dukes. The summer we moved there in 65, I met Dick Treat and Rob and Gary Hicks and Gail Updadale, Bob Leonard. I started them the day I moved there. I ran into them at the place called The Cellar where the Shadows of Night were playing, and I met them in line, and we started the next day. Boy, what luck. Yeah, but anyhow.
I watched your biography. I did see that. We just went up to a guy in line and said, we're going to be the band together.
Yes. And so I heard that Billy Lee and the Rivieras had changed their name to Mitch Ryder and the Detroit Wheels, and my holy grail of guitar licks at the time was this Jenny Take a Ride lick that I am the only guy on the planet that can play it right. And I saw that they changed their name to Mitch Ryder and the Detroit Wheels, and they were playing at the auditorium. And I bought a ticket. I think it was like $5. And I went and sat in the front row, and they didn't notice me out there. We had played together on a half dozen of occasions at the Walled Lake Casino in Novi, Michigan, and at Club 1270, the radio gigs on little stages outdoors. So I watched them to reminisce the power that this band had. And Shut Up and Jam, Johnny Bonanjak played drums on a couple of songs, just a great friend. And I just bought Jimmy McCarty's black-faced 1968 Fender Twin that he recorded Jenny Take a Ride, Devil with the Blue Dress, and Sock It to Me. So that connection of all those years ago is still alive and well today. But that was the first concert I went to. And by the way, that's the only concert I've ever bought a
went
ticket
to as a patron.
Yes. I've been to many.
Right. As a paying customer patron, the only concert you ever went to.
The only one I've ever been to in my life.
Wow, that is fucking cool as shit. Now, the drug question, we know you've never done any drugs in your life, so there's no reason to answer that question, right?
That's right.
Except, let me ask you this, a stupid thought. When you got your knee surgery, they had to give you some sort of prescribed painkillers.
All right, I'm going to tell you right now. First of all, I've always been a proponent and a celebrant and a promoter of anything for medicinal purposes.
Right.
I mean, morphine, whatever it takes to help people through a difficult...
What if it's fat pussy, though?
That'll kill you.
I've been prescribed it several times. It's just, I mean, what the doctor tells me I got to do, Ted. I got to do it.
James will tell you he's come so close to death so many times. You got to back off that thing, man. Anyhow, so when I hear now, you guys are sex, drugs, and rock and roll. Okay, my name is Ted Nugent. I've been drug and alcohol free and tobacco free my whole life. Now, I do drink a little red wine around the campfire with some fresh venison, but that I don't think that qualifies me as a drinker. Shemaine, my wife, she knows about wine. We have a little red wine once in a while. Also, when I shoot my machine guns with the Delta Force guys and the Navy SEALs, an occasional Cuban cigar will show up and we'll light it and I'll chew on it when I'm shooting my machine gun, because nothing goes with brass rainbows like a lit Cuban. My point being is that I got a little message for you, Shannon, James, Ralph, you ready? My name is Ted Nugent and I want some Dilaudid. Is that how you pronounce it? I had something called Dilaudid. Is that it?
Oh, is it? It's a prescribed drug.
Yes. It was awesome. It was really awesome. I mean, I can play some cool blues, but when I had some of that Dilaudid. Ripped, but in control.
You know what you should do? Just smash one of your knees again. Get some Dilaudid right away.
Is that how you pronounce it? I think that's what I had, but it was awesome.
I leave it to Shannon. She knew. So now the last one is your first experience with actual intercourse.
1965. I just turned 16, and I'm going to leave it there.
Okay. Wow. And then what about this one? And Gilby Clark of Guns N' Roses coined this term for us. He called it rock star sex, and he meant the first time he got laid because he was who he was. Do you remember that time?
It erupted shortly after that 1965 moment, because that 1965 moment might have had an era and an aura of that, because I was I started the
already famous at that point. We're already like you were already won a battle of the bands. You're already a rock star, I guess.
Yeah, so I don't know what unearned sex is like. I mean, I've earned it all, you know.
Oh, you just ask me. I wrote the book on it. I'll tell you.
And by the way, if I can, I don't talk about this because my wife, Shemaine, is the goddess of all goddesses. And she's the sexiest thing that has ever. I don't know if you've seen pictures of this.
I haven't. She was the weather reporter on your show. That's how you met her years ago.
Oh, oh, my God. What a gift. Coming out of the shower under candlelight. Holy shit. James, Ralph, do you chew hips?
Chew hips?
You got to, Shannon, get your man to chew your hips. I'm telling you.
Shannon's got to first get a man. That's the problem.
Well, here's my point.
And also, by the way, Ted, I'm going to say it in code. She has one of those FPs.
No.
No, I'm just kidding.
But here's my point. It's called
sex. Take some dopamine, it's all the same.
It's called sex, drugs, and rock and roll. I know I'm never ambiguous. Nobody ever ends a conversation with me and goes, "I wonder what he means." I'm rather complete in my picture painting of anything I try to express. Is that an accurate statement?
I think it's pretty accurate.
Well, there are no words. God hasn't provided a vocabulary to adequately describe the role that sex has played in my life. I'm sorry. You just have to remain like me, confused. There's no words to describe it. It is right in there with the tsunami of inspiration and stimuli of the music, the unlimited musical bombardment. I've always been an athletic guy until I had my knees replaced. I'm still pretty athletic now, but there are no words. So sex, drugs, and rock and roll, take out the drugs, and sex and rock and roll, holy motherfucker. You have no idea.
I do believe you wholeheartedly. And by the way, I've never seen a better poster child for eating wild venison to help your memory and your brain. Because, man, you are citing things from 60 years ago like right. It happened yesterday, which I can't remember what I had for breakfast yesterday. So I give you credit for that. Let's run. I know the new album, Handsome Devil, is coming out soon, correct?
Well, I don't know about soon. We're getting in the studio. I've got the songs lined up. I got just monster songs. God damn, I love these songs. With Michael Lutz, the author of Smoking in the Boys Room, Brownsville Station. He's a musical god. And Jason Heartless on drums, just an animal. Greg Smith on bass guitar, just an absolute pummeling beast of groove. We are going to the studio. We're going to rehearse in another week. We go in the studio within days because we keep it fire. We're like horny teenagers in a garage with our first amp because we can't wait to play these licks, to play these songs. And I have these arrangements that are streamlined and fat-free. The only thing I like fat-free are my hunting dogs, my women, and my songs. Everything else I want fat. Anyhow, we'll get in the studio and we'll record the basic tracks, and I'll do some overdubs to, you know, expand and enrich and outrage the arrangement. And I'll do my vocals, and Greg and I will do our vocals. I might get some guest vocals like Sammy Hager, maybe Derek St. Holmes, maybe Mitch Ryder. I'm talking to all these guys. But the album, I would be surprised if it's out before midsummer.
Okay, still 2021, that's good.
Yeah, I'm
that's
expecting nice. A July record. And it might be called Handsome Devil, which is just funny as hell. That's what the president called me. But it also might be called Come and Take It. It's a historical battle cry that, by the way, if you want a personally autographed Ted Nugent Come and Take It hat, I've signed them by the thousands on an assembly line, and people are buying them faster than I can sign them. But you get them at my website. But Come and Take It is like a pair of middle fingers on fire with these pricks who want to disarm law-abiding Americans. We go, yeah, well, come and get them, motherfucker. Here's my address. I'll meet you at the gate at 2 o'clock. We'll see how you do.
Fair enough. James, your plugs?
Okay. Usually, I mean, I'm so confident doing these. I feel like so much pressure. All right. So the James Madden on Instagram, my podcast, The Commissioner Comedy. It is the inside of comedy. I got a hot new issue about this. Where should I work? Comedy clubs, alternative venues. Work where the fuck you want, where you can. My new album is coming out called The Check Spot. It is me doing stand-up, a Q&A with an audience while they pay their bills, which is the worst part to do a comedy show. And I did it because I'm a ninja. And April 2nd, New York Comedy Club Sessions, me with a band. Me with a band doing a joke with a real fucking dope band called The 45 Band. Check that shit out. V. James Madden. Yeah, baby, I'm going to shoot an arrow now. Come on.
James, I love James. I love James. You have a piss and vinegar thing going on. God bless you, son. God bless you, my son.
Now, let's see. Now, Ted, let's see how Shannon does. Shannon, your plugs?
So first, before I do my plugs, I wanted to say one thing very quickly, Ted. I was with my aunt this morning, and she was so excited when I told her that you were going to be on the show. She said when she was a teenager and all the other teenagers had David Cassidy on their walls, is that her name, that she had only posters of you all over her walls, and she loves you. So I just wanted to let you know that.
That's a very, very smart woman with priorities. God bless her. Give her a big greasy smooch for me, would you?
I absolutely will. You can follow me on Instagram at ShannonLee6982 and listen to my podcast, The Thing Is. Ding. We talk about bad dates, fighting, and ghosts.
Ted, you ever been in a fight?
Yeah, a couple times in my earlier days, but they weren't really fights. I just kind of ended the encounter.
Fair enough. And what about this? Do you believe in ghosts? Because she does a show with fighting and ghosts. Do you believe in ghosts?
You know, I believe in a spirit world. I suppose ghost could be a nomenclature applied therein. But when you spend as much time isolated in the great outdoors, things happen that can't be explained in the material world. The Fred Bear song, for example, about this great hero and friend of mine that died in 1988 after hunting with him and inspiring my dad to be a bow hunter. He's like the guru. He was like the Chuck Berry of bow hunting. When he passed, this haunting pattern came out of me. You probably heard the song, but
it came out in an unstoppable moment
where I just started pounding a lick that I'd never played before. I mean, got goosebumps on my goosebumps, and I just played it and sang it. Never wrote a word down, never had an anticipated chord, and we were so heartbroken when the man passed, and they all knew that he was a dear friend of mine. I had hunted with him on his last hunt that previous fall, and it was divine intervention. And I've had moments like that, especially in those emotional explosions when a child is born, or most emphatically, over the years, families have contacted me, boy, talking about out of body, where their little sons and daughters, 6, 7, 8-year-old kids, their last request in life is to hunt with Ted Nugent.
Yeah, that is crazy.
How could I possibly have qualified? What did I do to earn that entrance into that family's moment that is an indescribable emotional moment? And they come to the campfire and I get them to laugh and I play, they all ask for Fred Bear. They all ask to play Fred Bear. And it's a buoyant moment that I'm strong throughout. And then when they leave, I just lose it for hours because I had to be strong while they're at the campfire. And I got them to laugh, and their parents are so emotional. That's the first time she's laughed since the chemo and whatever. And I'm strong and funny and cocky and, hey, it's going to be okay. And then they leave, and I just turn into an, I'm helpless. That's got to be an outside force. Yeah,
I would agree with that. That's a good way to put it. I think also the nomenclature of the idea is right. Someone might call it spirit. Someone might call it ghost, but there's something. I get it. Follow me everywhere at I Am Ralph Sutton, my other podcast on health and wellness called Good Sugar. Ted, it has been a fucking honor and a thrill to have you on. I knew it was going to be an easy hour. We add a song every week to our playlist. After that story, how could we not add Fred Bear? We'll add that to the playlist every week. Looking forward to the new record. The auction's going on this weekend. Go to tednugent.com. All the links are there for the hat, for the auction, links to his TV show, everything you could possibly want to know. They just passed 100 episodes. Thank you so much for taking the time out, dude.
Ralph, God bless you, man. I appreciate it. And Shannon and James, it's been a pleasure. It's been like a Ted Nugent campfire. Can you feel the embers glowing between us? So really, I do appreciate the opportunity to mouth off and express myself and to share ideas and have a dialogue or a quadalogue with you three. So thank you very much. Good luck. Godspeed. Somehow make 2021 the very best year of our life during the clusterfuck that we're surrounded by. But keep that positive spirit and that positive energy. And James, I think you'll be just fine. You have found the fountain of piss and vinegar. So my friend, I salute you first for doing the swan dive into the fountain of piss and vinegar. And Ralph, you're doing a fine job. Beautiful. And Shannon, you're just so beautiful. It doesn't matter.
All right. Now, thank you so much. And then lastly, before you go, quick question. Am I an idiot? Is venison and elk the same creature?
Yes. All game meat, whether it's a squirrel or a woodchuck or a rabbit, the Native Americans reference all game flesh venison. So whether you have a kudu or a wildebeest or an elk or a pronghorn antelope or bear haunch, those in the know, and believe me, it's all I've eaten.
They all go under the term venison, even though they may be different creatures.
Yes.
The term of game meat is venison.
Yes, absolutely.
But to the layman, venison is usually deer, right?
Usually it is because commercial establishments are not allowed to sell real venison. The chef can make legally killed venison for you, but you can't charge you for it, which is really so stupid. If you want to get sick, find some meat with USDA on it, because no one's ever gotten sick from lovingly, reverentially handled carcasses that we kill ourselves.
That reminds me, the one thing I forgot to tell you, the thing I loved more than anything, I don't think you make it anymore, your fucking jerky was my favorite.
Ralph, we're coming to your rescue, pal. We got another guy that's supplying this wild game meat in a legal. We finally got the legalities out of the way. So there will be some sacred Nugent flesh horizon.
I used to love that jerky. You fucking killed me when you stopped making it.
It's rocket fuel for your mind, body, spirit, and soul. You'll just become better at everything when you eat Nugent flesh.
All right. Thank you, sir. And we'll see you next week on the SDR show.
All right, guys, Godspeed, live it up. Happy springtime. Live it up.
Thank you.
All right, before we go, if you enjoy this podcast, you might also enjoy some of the other podcasts available right here at GasDigitalNetwork.com. This week, we're highlighting Broad Topics. Topics is spelled T-O-P-I-X with hosts Kim Congdon and Alex Scarlato. You probably know both of them if you're a fan of this network. You can find the full catalog of all their episodes on demand at GasDigitalNetwork.com or catch the latest 15 episodes anywhere you find podcasts. We're going to play a clip right now of Broad Topics on Gas Digital.
So okay. so we go to our
one last garage sale
and we kind of move out of the nicer neighborhood into like this little trailer park area, which was so cute, and the energy there top notch.
Everybody was it was a mobile home.
They were the happiest people I've ever seen in my dang life.
There's a difference between trailers and mobile homes, and I'll tell you, I've lived in both.
I don't know the difference. I'm sorry.
A mobile home is just a classier trailer park. It's for older people. Trailer parks are for meth addicts and people who got pregnant by their daddies at 11. And a mobile home is just people that want to save some money, live small, and buy a big camper.
No, these were like classy people. Those campers looked nice, all right? That looked like an expensive camper to me. Yeah. And we came upon this old lady having a garage sale that, like, she was just starting to pack up a little bit.
When we got out, she was done.
Yeah, I guess so. Because we got out and she was like, take it all. Please.
No, at first she started with the corner, remember?
Oh, that's right. That's right.
She
the
wasn't
corner.
Sure.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. She was like, that stuff over there in the corner is going to Goodwill already. So if you want anything from that corner, you could just take it.
When I tell you, I dove into that.
Alex dove. Kim had to sit down, like, take her fucking hat off for a second and get comfortable. You know, she sat on the grass.
You saw that breathing exercise? I had to stop and do that because I about passed out when she said that. My free corner?
Mind you, these things cost 25 cents a piece, but man, the way that she started loading buckets of this woman's things into a pickup truck to the point where I'm sitting in the back seat of this truck, she's going to piss herself. Poor Kimmy. Literally, I'm sitting in the back of the pickup truck with things on top of me by the time we're leaving. That ain't neither here nor there, though. Kim was real excited when she saw those things, and she packed them in pretty much without looking at them. Like, we had to look at the whole haul later. But in the meantime, we're talking to this lady. Her name was Sue. Oh, I hear the toilet flush. I'm just trying to stretch till Kim makes it back here. Because I really want her to be here when we talk about Sue. I'm going to wear some of Sue's clothes on next week's podcast, first of all, when I'm back in New York. Okay. Remember when we met Sue?
I remember
Sue. So she's the lady. She's the lady who was like, take that shit in the corner. I'm giving it to Goodwill already. And over the course of us shopping at her garage sale for like an hour or so, she let out a little more of her personality by the minute.
The more she told us, the more she gave us free shit, the more we had to know. It was the rule for taking her shit is we have to have her story permanently ingrained in who we are as people. Listen, so, now we're going to start this. I wish that we could have like the story of Sue.
Frank, work on that.
The story of Sue. If you could have one cigarette, just go.
So she's like this petite old lady, right? She can't be taller than I guess she's like 5'7" or so, but she's so petite. She's wasted away. Sue.
She looks like tan mom.
Yeah. She's got white hair. She looks
she's
really
got like a
old.
Bowl cut, like a little bit of like a.
Yeah, like white hair, like really, really short, cute.
She's adorable. She's smoking a cigarette.
Raspy old voice.
She sounds like me now.
She sounds like the character that we'd been doing since before we met her.
Whatever we've been doing since we started this, that's Sue.
So, first of all, Kim knows me. She knew that I was like, not this lady had just bags of her clothes. And I was like, I'm not looking through this shit. This is fucking crazy.
How pro was I?
And Kim was like, you better look through those bags. All right. This is all free. And I opened up the bags and it's like I was Sue in a different life. She wore the same perfect size as me. There's all of these like cool acid wash jeans and like dope shit from the 70s. She used to ride motorcycles, fucking cool hats and shit. All this stuff that I would buy fresh off the rack if I saw it, Sue was just giving me for free. It fits me like a fucking glove.
Every time we grabbed something, she'd thank us, and that's when I knew something was up.
She was like, thank you. I'm telling you, the less money that goes to the fucking CEO of Goodwill, the better.
And I said, that's right, Sue. Do you want these Bundt cake makers?
He said, he's been ripping us off for years, Sue. You want these?
Hey, Sue, what you got inside?
I know you said take it. I just want to double check.
I was doing that. I was going, are you sure this grandfather clock?
Are you sure we can?
Meanwhile, I'm in the corner firing up eBay. Like, it's my job. I'm looking through. I've said this once or twice tonight. I'm looking through Sue's trinkets as if they were my own grandfather's.
But also, as Sue is watching me unbox her clothes with like the joy on my face, she's deciding that she's done with everything at her garage sale, and she's like, you know what? Fuck it. It's not just this corner. Everything here is free for you.
She makes
us
the announcement mid us going through her trash, and we celebrate like the rats that we are.
We fucking dance.
We're like, thank you,
we
sis.
Dance like banshees about it.
I can't. You've been listening to the SDR Show.